Sound check. Oh, hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
As I clip.
Clippity-doo. Hi.
Hey.
How are you?
I was just finishing my... I made a video for once. Just a very short video. I'm just basically giving up on making social media posts.
Cool. One for the YouTube, so the grams.
Yeah. Both. It's the same. I just re-sliced it. Just, we have, it had been like 95% done since January, the ISO 30 tool tag tower.
Ah, the model head.
But,
yep.
Yeah, I just literally needed to change the size slight, like under 2 millimeters. I want to say one some millimeters from the BT-30 one, which we had done last year. And I just never finished it. And somebody asked about it recently, and they're like, "Do you gonna do this for ISO 30?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, yeah." That's done.
Cool. But don't you use ISO 30 tooling?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Funny.
But you didn't have that. Oh, but it is funny.
It just wasn't a need. One. Like.
Okay.
I think I haven't. This is like how all of our products go, as far as just like when I have the problem, I solve the problem. And
oh, totally.
Our pedestals, particularly, we made our own weird different tool tags that attach to the pedestals.
Yeah.
And so we usually send those with when people buy a set of pedestals. So they're a little bit different, whereas the green ones are like machine agnostic. They're just meant for that, you know, taper.
Sure.
I just didn't need it, I guess. And
oh. Cool. Does that mean the tool tag system and the pedestal system kind of, do you see those as different markets? Like the tool tags more for mill operators? Yeah.
My origination for it was because I couldn't tell what was in the dang machine for our YCM. I was like, you know, a router, you just look across and you're like, there's the tools. And when we got the mill, you know, it has 20 tools and some people have hundreds, and it's way harder to keep track of. And like the particular case, which is obvious, is you go to set up for a new job, new run of something, like, okay, there's 20 tools in here. What are they? You know, like if I wasn't the last one to run it, or like, I don't remember. So that was the reason for me, and then I never really thought I was going to sell it, and kind of worked out. So I think it's still useful. I just saw Eric Treen and Justin from Fernway talking about on furniture product customer things, where they were describing, one of them, I think it was Eric, said basically like, we aren't our own customers, right? And we shouldn't, you know, like fishermen, I think somebody said this, fishermen don't like fish for themselves. They usually can't afford their own, you know, fish that they catch. Like, you can't afford a whole tuna. Like, we aren't, I'm not my own customer. And it's taken me years to become that in a lot of ways, where I want to solve my own problems, but also people will use this way differently than I ever would.
But then if you're Rick Rubin, you say you ignore the audience and you make what you think you should make, or you make it for you. So, I don't know.
Which I still do. That's the genesis for all the new products. It's just like when somebody wants, you know, wants this product and I hadn't finished it, it's like they saw the utility and I didn't, you know. It's really so close, just literally a size difference.
Yeah, I was chatting to a friend during the week about something similar to that, in terms of why we've hung on to custom work when we could have just kind of morphed into, we had the opportunity to morph into a product business entirely. And I was saying how, you know, morphing, just chopping and changing overnight and dropping all our custom work is scary. But also just like the, how important custom work and, like, you know, those interactions have been to our you know, our product development journey of like learning, like all the challenges that have come with custom work, but also, you know, you get a problem from a customer and then you're compelled to solve it. And then that feeds back into your own loop of solutions and product designs. And without that sort of external pressure to complete, like so much stuff just wouldn't, like I would have never arrived at Kitaparts had we not had a sort of an external client job that we joked about, oh, maybe we could do an internal female thread inside that bit of timber. Ha ha ha, wouldn't that be cool? And then like months of stuffing around trying to solve that. And then like, oh, well, we can do that now.
Stop thinking about it.
Now what? So yeah,
I don't know if we have a...
Having an audience is good.
Yeah. We talked about that this week when we were working on one of our upcoming products, and I had asked Ricky, I'm not always good at this, but I had asked him in one of them, we're working on, has a handful of different types of features for it. And we had like, kind of like concepts of how one of them would work. And I was like, hey, could you work on this? Like, I don't usually like delegate early design things, but he's shown capable of, you know, designing things in different aspects. And it came up kind of in that conversation. He's like, yeah, I don't really get it after like a day. And I was like, well, you know, it's like when you did the duck tower, it's like in a lot of cases in design, you're starting from this place of there is no right answer. You just got to like, you know what you want to solve for maybe. And in between there's this big, messy, mushy area where it's like he was like, I'm afraid, you know, kind of afraid to have bad ideas. And I was like, well, if we don't have the bad ideas, we can't make them and then say they're bad ideas. You know, like we have to start with the bad idea or something. Otherwise, we're just going to sit here and stare at it. I think you get really used to that. At least it wasn't easy for me to like make bad things, even though I knew they were bad in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting part of the process. It's funny that we just randomly started talking about this because the the friend Tom I was chatting to about this has been here all week because he's doing his PhD in design and he was using us as a case study. And so he was here doing some observations and interviews with staff and stuff. And a lot of his research is around that sort of early meta phase of a project, like the early fluffy can't quite tell what it is yet, or you know, not fully formed stage of a project. So it's interesting to kind of chat through and explore that stuff with him.
Right.
And it made me aware of like how much my process has changed in terms of that, like that some of the tools, particularly like AI tools that I sort of rely on now to sort of as a research partner in those early stages, which I just didn't, you know, obviously didn't use or didn't have access to in the past.
Yeah, anyway, I didn't plan to talk about that, but c'est la vie.
Good to be back.
Sure, that was a really nice accent for those with the proper
accent. Speaker de français, so good. Très bien.
A guy came up to our door, and Ricky and I were talking about that stuff earlier, and he didn't speak any English, and I was like, I know a little bit of Spanish, and I was like trying, and it was just like, we just were staring at each other like, nope. This isn't working. He just wandered away, and I was like, okay, see ya. You could tell he wasn't here for my space.
Yeah. So sorry I missed last week. I was quite ill in a tent.
Something about throwing up in a tent with your family?
Yeah, all five
or
of
maybe
us
the other end.
Had some stomach bug last week.
Oh, my God.
After Laura's, in a tent. I mean, it was a big tent, to be fair, but still,
toilets?
We're camping, not in the room, no. So yeah, it was a pretty horrendous week. Laura finished her install and literally like threw up an hour later. And then the kids had already come down with it at that point. And so yeah, it was kind of all five of us. It's pretty horrendous, but we made it. We made it home. It was good to be home. Yeah. No incentive to travel for a little while. Stay home. Thank you.
I only took like a 3 hour, we took a little trip to see some family, and it was about 3 hours away. Oh, my kid is at the ripe age of very vocal, very, very mobile, doesn't understand why he has to be in a car seat for 3 hours. So it'd be like 10 minutes into the ride either way, and you go, I'm done, all done, all done, all done. And you're like, no, buddy, we got so much time left.
Yeah, amazing.
I would take my situation over all 5 second attempt though. Sorry.
yeah, it was good to be back. It was good to come back to work, having spent sort of 2 weeks of feeling split between parenting and wanting to keep the business moving remotely, and to sort of dive into like a full, like it was, my brain had whiplash on Monday coming into like a full uninterrupted work day. It's just like, what? I can focus on something for more than 5 minutes? And got like this sort of adrenaline high for most of the day, because I was just like, woo, I can just keep working. This is great. What do I do now?
I get that, like it feels wrong when I get here and I'm the first one here and it's quiet for like 10 minutes. And I'm like, whoa, what's... Did everybody die?
It's quiet.
Like, I just have the one kid, you know, like, I can't imagine.
Yeah, so it's been nice to be back.
Good.
Fiddling with the robots again. I must admit, I walked in and I made a coffee and looked at the robots. I avoided looking at the robots for the first sort of half an hour because I was like, it's been too long. I can't even remember what to do with them. Why are they here? What am I doing?
Like sunflowers just watching you.
Watching me through the windows. How good would that be?
Jim, we're here. Come back.
To walk down to the shop and turn the lights on. It's like, oh, yeah, these things. What do I do? Where do I start? Where do I resume my progress? Because I'd done two short night sessions before I left.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of actually having them plugged in and doing something, jogging around. So jumped back in to Grasshopper and just kept fiddling in that space. And pretty quickly got to sanding apart. I don't know if you saw the video on Insta, but or the story.
Johnny's?
No, mine. I successfully sanded a kit apart's bevel.
Wait, did I miss?
Yeah, the story's gone, man.
Yes, I missed it.
Yep. Nothing.
Let's blame Instagram.
Blame Jim not posting to YouTube.
Wait, was this the one where you used the Scotch-Brite?
No, this was a flat, like a quite big flap disc thing that I bought on AliExpress.
No, I saw that one. Okay. I didn't see you use it though.
Yeah. So yeah, I sanded a bevel and it worked out of the bag basically. First shot. I'd stuffed around a Grasshopper and programmed this thing and kind of the reality, spent some time sort of matching the reality of Grasshopper to the physical reality of the robot setup, which was a bit fiddly, and I did it in a very hacky way, but then, yeah, held it down with a vacuum fixture and sanded around the profile. So it was amazing. Just a 2D toolpath, like 2.5 axis toolpath, so very basic. And my next challenge is to try and get that tool up into like a 5-axis swarf sort of to follow that bevel properly. And that's breaking my brain a bit. I've stuffed around in Grasshopper. I've kind of worked out how to do it on one edge in Grasshopper, but I don't know. Like, my skills just aren't there to do, like, the multi-surface follow stuff. But then, you know, Johnny's downloaded or has got access to the manufacturing extension in Fusion for this month, and we're both kind of learning in parallel and kind of trying to share
parallel
stuff.
Parallel for AI, right?
And he can, you know, generate a swarf toolpath easily in Fusion. But then he's running into all sorts of roadblocks in terms of the rapid code that Fusion's outputting, doing weird things with like just the poses and the robot just doing really uncomfortable
like kind of stuff.
And yeah, just doing really awkward like wrist flips that then cause problems with cable management. And we're basically at a point now where we're both like really in the weeds about this comp. It's called conf data, and it's just like these simple binary values that relate to kind of locking or restraining certain axes, but it's like it's just breaking my brain trying to wrap my head around it. So we're a bit lost. But yeah, progress is being made.
It would seem to me my brain would only work in being able to like send something from something like Fusion where it knows how to position things. I mean, I guess the best case, the good thing about this is that you're not trying to like fully reach around something. You're still staying above it. It's just, there's still so many joints though that I'm sure it isn't happy when it tries to go like from the back edge to the right edge where it's like, oh, I can't reach that far and get to that back corner to bend perfectly around that edge. And
it's more that it's proving that cable management's just being going to be a real factor with this stuff. Like if you want to get right around, even like a flat profile, if you want to get right around something neatly,
just tons of movement.
It's a lot of movement. It's a lot of like twisting up of like this tight sort of axis 5, 4, 5, 6. And you know, I've got this beautiful, nice flexy duct on there, but it's, you very quickly end up in a spot. Whereas if I don't pause that now, I'm just going to crush that conduit. So it's
challenging. That crazy, you'd probably know the name. The thing that David referenced when I did that shop tour of his that they kind of helped pioneer the use of was that environment where you can like simulate robots in. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like software.
Yeah, it had like a really lofty name.
It's Robot Studio, like, which is the ABB one. We're using RoboDK for a bit of simulation. But the thing is, ultimately the code only determines kind of endpoint definitions, really, or robot targets. And that it's the robot controller itself is doing the inverse kinematics on the fly. So, like, sometimes it will simulate and match reality, and other times the robot will take a different path to solve that position. So, you kind of, there's always this sort of sense of uncertainty of, like, at this stage anyway, I'm sure in like 6 months we'll look back at this in life and be like, we didn't understand what that one negative value did.
Yeah.
In parentheses there. But, at the moment, it's kind of like we're a bit in the dark and just it's beyond us of how to sort of control these poses. And partly because we're going around it in a bit of a hacky way. Like we're not dropping $25,000 on a piece of software that would probably solve this for us on the spot. We're like, let's use the tools we've got. Let's use Rhino. Let's use Fusion. See what we can come up with. So,
I gotta figure this out now. No, it's killing me.
That's the What's Inside This Secret Robot Workshop, that video.
Yeah. I think, I mean, it's like an hour long video, so I don't.
Let's just pause. I'll watch it now.
Pause. Just watch. I can ask him after this.
Nice. In terms of his simulation software that he was using.
Yeah, it reminds me of like closer to like, he didn't show it to me just from what I remember talking about. It's like closer to like a game engine.
Cool.
You can have the whole thing in there and simulate the robot movement and.
Yep.
I guess I don't know what's driving it.
There's definitely solutions like that for sure. If we want to pay for them, we're just, you know, trying to avoid that. Yep. But yeah, makes progress. Feels good. Boop, boop.
Yeah.
What have you been up to?
I've spent a lot of my time on product development.
Great.
Getting closer on one. In a moment of frustration, the end of a day. I was trying to make a 4x6 standard like shipping size label. Like we have label two label printers, one that makes like smaller labels, one that makes our shipping labels, and they just take like a PDF to print, right, from Windows or Mac, a normal printer. And I went over to the shipping computer and I was like, I need a 4x6 label for something, just the text on it. Couldn't do it. Couldn't, just, you know, for one, it's flipping Windows and they just like, there's nothing simple to me about like making that happen. So I go to my Mac and I'm like, I go to open pages and type in the label. I'm like, okay, that worked. I was like, I'm just going to make something. So I made, spun up Cursor, and it was honestly within 20 minutes, I had a working thing like locally on a local server. And then I was like, all right, so for Ricky to use this, because he's always trying to make labels too, I ended up making it like a hosted service, I guess, free service called labeldumper.com.
You sent this to me and the you other can day. Make I laughed. I was like, I can't tell if Justin has just made this or he's just found it.
Yeah.
It looks like it's something he's made. It. That's so funny.
Yeah, I kind of then spent, it was like I got it done in 20 minutes, and then that night and like a little bit the next day, I took me probably another 90 minutes of messing around and getting a domain and hosting it. And there's, well, the one thing that doesn't work currently is you can't just print the label. Seems that browsers are a little more fussy about printing than if you just download the PDF, it basically works every
interesting.
Time.
It's pretty cool.
It's got the sizes that we use for things, and it just really easily makes a label. Like I had it working so fast, it was wild. I was like, oh, well, this wasn't hard at all. And so now it's like any browser, you can pop it open and
what brand of label. Printed label printers do you use?
The main is it's a Zebra 2844.
Okay.
It's like, I think I got it on eBay. It's like one of those old school ones that like just, it's probably 20 years old and it just trucks, just keeps printing thermal labels. Sick.
That's cool. Because we've,
the other
one's
a Dymo 450.
Yeah, we have a Dymo 450 and a Dymo 4XL or something. But we just have the Dymo software open all the time. And it's such janky software. I kind of hate it, but it works. Like, it just sits there and works most of the time.
See, the problem is I when I want to make something on the larger labels, on the 4x6 labels, there was no Dymo software doesn't work for that. Like,
yeah, right. Okay.
It's only for its own software. And I was just like, this is stupid. It needs a PDF. Like, I need to print from a browser, and that works fine. And so I showed it to my brother and he was like, God, you have the most niche problems. And I was like, I know.
I think, yeah, that's one of my favorite bits about Gen AI tools to date is solving super niche little problems.
Yeah. Yeah.
That then become part of my daily workflow. Good luck making that back on your Amazon affiliate.
ROI.
Sticker links.
That's right, baby.
Yeah. Very cool. Nice one.
Ricky was very excited. I'll have you know.
Nice. In terms of the product dev you've been doing, mm-hmm. I'm curious because I'm not doing any. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm in this stage where I'm the things that I am doing are like trying to enable our customers to buy our things more easily through like the configurator.
Yeah.
Or I'm trying to make our products more efficiently through robotics at the moment.
Yeah.
They're kind of my two things, but I'm putting zero energy into actually new product or new accessories even within those product ranges. So I'm curious, like, what your sort of time input looks like, or like, are you getting into the office and sitting down going, right, I'm going to progress Project X today, and then like get hours of R&D done on that, or like when are you doing it? What's it look like?
Way better than it had been. Way better than it. Like what I know from since 2021 is every time we put out a new product, it means 5 to 6 digits of revenue, right? Like, it's depending on what it is, every month, this is, you know, luckily it's held mostly true. And again, yeah, it depends on the product, depends on whatever. So it's always in the back of my mind. And do I do a good job at that? No. So I know I'm not very good at timelines for any of it. And it's not like, oh, I'm a perfectionist. It's just sometimes I don't know how to make something and I get interrupted by like doing a job shop job and it takes me a while to get back to it. And somebody mentions that they want a tool tag tower in ISO 30 and I do that instead of working on the bigger, more important product. You know, it's like they all have value and I keep trying to constantly focus on what has the most density of like revenue and profitability and like things that we can do well. And I mean, the one product that I'm pretty certain is going to do pretty well is it's got things that I just haven't done in terms of like making it and
like unfamiliar processes.
Yeah, processes, yeah. And just it's, you know, it's part of that. It's great. It's like you're talking about with jobs doing custom work. It's like those things push my boundaries of what I'm comfortable with, and then I learn processes or vendors and resources. And yeah, I mean, I guess it's always been that way for me with products. It's always like, well, I want to make a printed calendar, and like I don't know how to print anything. So you know, you find somebody to work with and learn about the paper. And I guess you asked more about like the time I should schedule my time more. I just kind of, like I was saying, the best case for me is I get here pretty early and I just start working on products and that's not cool. Answer emails and try to like, that's my best thinking time. It's the best when I'm least distracted. And it's not super consistent, but it's been better than it has been, which is nice.
Yeah, I just find it really, even with the projects I am working on, find it really hard not to just fall into like the inbox trap of like,
yep,
oh shoot, yeah, I've got to pay that bill that's overdue, or got to answer that to keep that moving, and oh, and I'm just going down like this focus rabbit hole of like, oh yeah, that drawing, I should really get that drawing done to keep that job moving and send it to that person. And then another email comes in and I'm like, oh yeah, blah blah blah, and just like blah, 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 just having these really kind of stringy distracted days or hours on end,
yeah,
without any sort of real stop and focus time.
Yep, I know that feeling,
right? Yeah, and yeah, it's a, I'm sure a very familiar thing a lot of us, but you know, I know I've got tools in the tool bag that I've used in the past to sort of combat that in terms of the sort of default diary stuff and you know, all sorts of tricks that I could be implementing, but I just, yeah, I'm finding that super challenging at the moment to carve out any dedicated time.
Whenever I get into product development or job shop, like I'm the one that's the lead, like I'm making something on the middle for a job, like everything else goes away, like my quoting, my emails, it's like just turns into this mess of like, oh, I haven't responded to anybody in a week while I'm finishing this thing. So it goes both ways.
Yeah,
where, you know, I'm better at the products, but my own inbox, not even like Help Scout, is a mess. And I don't know, to some degree, I guess I'm just learning to be okay with that, even though it doesn't feel good.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So Help Scout's different to your inbox? They're different things? Yeah.
I mean, so I have like Help Scout being like customer and, you know, anything that's like to our team inbox. And then, like, it'll send me, like, notifications, but, like, Ricky and I have our own email accounts where, like, I'm not sending, like, vendor, like, if a vendor charges us an invoice, it's not going to Help Scout because it's, like, not really. It's, like, I pay those bills and they just come to my inbox.
Sure.
It could, but it's just kind of messy. Doesn't really need to go there.
Yeah, cool.
I was going to say that the one thing that's been really just the more and more focused we've become on products and it's just always so much more clear. Like I was saying, like the value of a new product, to me, it should at this point, like it should be worth so much money in continual revenue that otherwise I shouldn't be working on it, first of all. And the second part is that it's like, I'm constantly trying to challenge myself against like taking a short-term job for any amount of money that's not like five digits at least, that is going to take me away from doing that, because it's just, it's such a setback to the mindset, the process, the like getting that new thing out, that I mean, I guess in a certain way you could, I think about it as like the person paying me to the job shop job isn't paying my bills forever, whereas the product hopefully should continue to pay my bills. And that being able to step away and do less and less and say no right away to things that aren't what we want to be doing for job custom work, it's so much less like fussy email stuff, like back and forth and massaging conversations and quotes and finding vendors, and I find it more satisfying and like stress reducing
the
time to focus now on making products.
Yeah, it was lovely from a product point of view to get back from being away and just have, just quite luckily, online sales were really strong during that period.
Ooh.
Partly because I was ending the discount on the configurator on June 30.
Right.
So we had a big influx of Kitapart sales on June 30 or that weekend. And a bunch of other conversions that kind of fell. And I did like a week's worth of revenue in a day on that Monday, just before we got sick, which was amazing because it was kind of like the only half decent work day I got done in that period when we were away. And yeah, it was just nice to return to like a job list or work in progress that was primarily filled with Kitaparts. It's like, nice, it's working. Feels good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But yeah, I totally know what you mean about the I'm still so caught up with all those little job shop requests or CNC routing, these sorts of things that are off. Not our ideal job anymore. I'm getting better at saying no quicker and not just sitting on them and letting them go stagnant. But they still sort of, you know, sit there as a list of things to attend to. And yeah.
That is like, I'm still so bad at it, but I just got an inquiry today, like two of them. And I just immediately, I think the more I say no, the easier it gets, I guess, or just like, you know, that's not right now. And, you know, I always try to find all these reasons as to why I can do it, which is just, we've talked about this, like how we both started, like we can solve your problems. And, yeah, just freeze up, you know, the amount of tickets sitting in Help Scout or my email is now, that pressure is now so much less for me of like the weight of like how many other things are waiting on me, which I guess in a certain way, like organizing your desk or something clears up my mind to like think about designing.
Anyway. Totally. Yeah. Yeah, it's good. I sold my wide belt sander this week.
Oh.
Bye-bye. Gone?
Like out?
It's going next week. Yeah, pack it up.
Nice.
It'll operate on Monday, and then we'll probably pack it up on Tuesday. So, yeah,
crazy.
Feels momentous. It's funny, I've got this, speaking of random little annoying jobs, I've got this one job that I've quoted where I've had to say to the customer, look, if you want to go ahead with this, we can only service this job while we've got this machine. So Monday is the day to get it done. So
it's good pressure sales, baby.
You better pay your deposit this weekend so we can get it done. Otherwise, I'm just going to be giving you your parts back.
I feel like so often I just get the person that's like, they'll like respond on Monday and go, like at the end of the day and go like, oh, can we still do this?
Yeah.
No, the machine is gone.
It's unplugged. But yeah, it feels good. I was pretty happy with the price I got for it in the end. When I'd done my research looking into selling it, I was like, oh, I think I can get 30 to 35K for it based on what's around in the secondhand market. And I got 32. So yeah, it's pretty much spot on.
Dang. Very nice.
Another regional joinery shop bought it. They sent their couple of their technicians up here the week I was away, and Johnny showed them around and they put some test pieces through it and were happy with it, and yeah. Done and dusted.
Yeah. Very cool.
Just gotta pack it up next week and
literally
get it on a truck. So that feels good.
So how hard is it to get just the standard flat sanding solution out of your robots? To me, that seems like one of the easier potential problems to solve.
Pretty easy. So yeah. I can do that toolpathing in Grasshopper now. I've got that far with Grasshopper, and I've ordered one of those. What is it? Who makes it? CNC Tools. I've ordered one of their floating orbital sanding heads.
Yep. Was it the Tools Today one?
CNC Sander. Yeah, I can't remember which. I don't think it's Amanda.
Different one.
Amanda. I'll look it up. CNC Sanding Tools. 6-inch floating free run orbital sanding head with a 5/8 shank. Yeah, so that will go in an ISO 30 tool holder. It's slightly sprung and it's, Velcro sanding pads. And so, yeah, I could toolpath that today in Grasshopper successfully.
Fun.
So yeah, sanding's a go. I mean, ideally, the robot would be able to move pick and pack, between piles for it to actually be effective in terms of processing multiple parts and not having to have an operator load every part and hit cycle start.
Would it be a second machine that does the moving, or would it turn its arm to have a suction or something?
I think ideally it would have two end effectors and it would just flip its wrist over and then do the sucking on the same arm. Seems crazy to use two robots to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, we have two robots, but I'll be trying to...
The timing seems a little tricky.
Yeah, then you got to get them to talk to each other and sync and stuff, which is a whole other thing I haven't looked into. But yeah, my plan is to have two end effectors.
Like, every time between when it sands one and the other one goes to pick it up, they need to slap hands?
Yeah. They're
tagging each other?
Yeah. Your turn.
Your turn. Go pick it up. I was daydreaming about a crazier version of this, was strapping 3 to 5 just human orbital sanders, the kind that a person would use, to a bar and just drag it across in one swoop.
That'd be cool.
No spindle required.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
It's like a rake.
Sanding rake. The short-term solution is to put this sanding head in the HSK spindle, which long-term is not the play, because we want to keep that spindle for doing multi-axis machining, not for sanding duties. So this just feels like an interim solution to sort of get our feet wet and get it doing some work, and then make a sanding-specific end effector, which would basically be an orbital sander of some sort, and put it on the other robot. Mm-hmm.
Here's another crazy idea. What if you had a sanding belt that was on the bottom and you just took the whole sheet and pushed it across like a joiner?
And then we shouldn't have sold our wide belt. We could have tipped it upside down and...
But you don't have to do it. The robot does it.
Yeah,
I have two pieces of news. News/ interesting stuff. Do you remember we talked about the Penta Solo, that little 5-axis machine?
Yeah.
We were kind of lusting over it. it would seem, in February, it got canceled.
What?
Didn't know this till yesterday, which makes me sad because they're a smallish company and it seemed like I had a lot of promise and I don't know why, but these selling the big five-axis DMU machine on their Instagram, and I wasn't really going to buy one, but I love the idea that somebody came up with a new kind of machine.
It was a desirable thing. Who was that? Captain someone?
Yeah, Inventor Captain.
Inventor Captain, yeah. Dang.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Can't win them all.
Yeah, I'm sure there's... Yeah, it's probably pretty dang hard to, like, support that and, like, when things go wrong, resolve them for people, and... Who knows? The other thing is... a fairly sizable potential shift, and I don't know if this is going to pan out to be as important as some of the articles I read said, but you know, Cloudflare, that like big, like they're kind of like the first gate of the front of the internet where like people use them to stop like DDoS attacks and like use them for their DNS so that like their website can be on a CDN, meaning like it disperses more better across the globe. They have a lot of weird little services for stuff. Pretty huge company. You'll get this a lot where you like go to a website and it's like, we need you to confirm that you're a human. And it says like Cloudflare and you have to like check a box. It's like before you get to your website, you go through Cloudflare. And they came up with an idea for bots crawling for AI companies to block them and then charge the bots that then pays the website creator for access to crawl.
Oh, okay.
Right now, like all these crawling companies are just crawling, like we were talking about before, crawling websites and taking data and turning them into their own new content, more or less.
Yeah,
right? When we say like, let's make an image. So I don't know, it could be a massive shift that they're, I'm sure they'll just figure out ways to go around it, but
who, the AI company?
Just any of the like crawling companies,
any of
like
the crawlers,
OpenAI or Anthropic, or
Well, there's been a bit of chat about how these companies are running out of existing feedstock too, in terms of all of humans' written. Existence that
I've
they're
not
kind
heard
of
that. That's crazy.
Reaching a point where they're sort of they don't really have much more existing stuff to feed into it, but that doesn't take into account that all of these models are now multimodal, and so you know the billions of interactions where people are feeding it photos and audio and video of the real world that continues to sort of obviously feed the beast. But, yeah, it's pretty crazy. I've been listening to a fair bit of stuff around that in the last few weeks and am in a state of feeling fairly pessimistic about it all in terms of where it's headed, concerned, pessimistic. And I was chatting to Laura last night on the couch about, like, because she just doesn't get it. Like, she doesn't get why I use these tools because she just hasn't engaged with them at all. And she's like, how can you feel like that but still be like a subscriber to these companies? Like, how can you feel like this is where things are headed, but still be sort of part of the system and a paying user? And, you know, my reasoning behind that is sort of, always has been about sort of, I feel like the world's changing as a result of these tools, and I want to be an active participant in terms of the forefront of knowing how they work and being there to sort of support my children when they get to that age of like knowing what the tools are. And I don't know. It's a tricky one, challenging, but yeah.
I keep saying this, but I don't really fully grasp what I've heard tell of how terrible, let's say, it is for environmentally or energy use, and I have not gone and done any research around that. I've probably selfishly just felt that it's such a multiplier of my time and what I want to get accomplished that they seem, well, all of the subscriptions seem ridiculously cheap for what you can accomplish in that time period. I think it's incredibly obvious when you hire services or have employees what time is worth and how costly it can be to use that time. And I mean, just the go back to like the GPT cost, it's like basically every day, once a day, maybe twice, just as one example, I talk to the AI and have conversations about mostly products or business things, like to or from work. And it's just like, it's like having a therapist slash business coach slash I mean, but it's just also wild. It's like it can do market research for me while it's also
a research assistant. Yeah.
Knowing everything we've talked about since 2022 or whatever that was. So I don't know. It makes me think, like, what is the thing that you feel, is there a short version of like, what do you feel so negative about having heard something new, I guess, lately?
Just the sort of the unknowns around this, the acceleration of this technology and what it's going to do. You know, where you know, these companies are going to become so incredibly powerful. They are already, we're already in a pretty messed up state of having a few very powerful people in the world making profit-driven decisions. You know, what's the accelerated version of that going to look like in terms of, you know, and it might not go that way, but at the right now I'm sort of at the pessimistic end of it. Like, I can't see this ending well. Whereas, yeah, there are versions of the projection which, you know, could, you know, end well for humanity, but I just can't see this acceleration for, in a sort of profit-driven context, and being good for the vast majority of people.
Right.
But I mean, whilst concurrently feeling like you and being like, these tools are incredibly valuable to me, and like, I'm a heavy user of them, and I feel greatly. Right. I just come back to the word augmented. Like, I feel so beneficially augmented by these tools that I can't picture really living without them anymore. Like, yeah, it's a weird sort of space where I'm torn between these things. Maybe it's a kick up the ass for me to be like, cool, well, you've already always been interested in offline open source models, like, why don't you investigate that with more rigor and like pull your finger out of your ass and actually...
Doesn't really change the reality of those companies, though, you know?
No, not at all. It's, like, insignificant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, this is a bad answer, but I don't feel like I have any ability to change any of that. And I also, like you said earlier, it's like, yeah, there's, like, what, 20 incredibly rich people in the world, it seems like, and most of them don't seem to be good people also. So I suppose if that's changing hands to another also bad person or somebody that makes those decisions, is kind of the same thing, you know. I don't know, things are so messed up here that the AI doesn't feel like a big part of it right now.
Yep.
It's not a good answer either, but
it's fair enough. Yeah you got bigger problems.
I mean, privilege-wise, I do not have many problems, but I feel, I don't know, not responsible, but just there's so many things that feel horrendous happening in the United States right now. I'm sure the world, but it's just highlighted for the injustices and you know, Palestine and all that stuff. It's just, yeah, it's all... think it's, I don't even know what to say about it. Just it's all also things I feel like I have no control over. And it is easy to just keep working in my bubble with my AI and
totally
good things people want to use.
Yeah, same. No, I know what you mean. Like, I feel incredibly weighed down by all of that.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, a huge sense of just inability to affect any change. So yeah, very much return to my little design and manufacturing bubble. Yeah.
You'll always have robots.
Safe space. Yeah. And yeah, obviously I also have a huge amount of privilege in terms of, you know, being in a position where these things don't really affect me, my day to day, other than sort of the emotional weight of being a world citizen who's aware of what's going on. You know, the reality is that I am safe and my family's safe and I have access to great tools and will, you know, continue to do so. And, you know, if we make this off-grid move with the workshop, we're going to be sort of energy independent and, yeah, we're going to be in a spot where we're sort of in a really good spot, basically.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, yeah, don't know. Blah, blah. What a light note to end on.
Yay! Happy Tuesday, everyone.
Well, I'm going to go plant some trees because that's what we're doing today. It's tree planting day.
Outside at your shop or somewhere
near? No, somewhere. The whole team is headed out and we're going to plant 500 trees.
Whoa.
Which nice. We haven't done,
for that in the past.
2 years now. We last did it 2 years ago, pre-downsize. And a lot of that stuff kind of fell off our radar in the scrabble to get the business back online. But, back on track somewhat financially, and so yeah, starting to put money again back into some of that good stuff. So yeah, it'll be fun.
Cool.
People are bringing their kids and we'll have an outing in the soggy fields getting trees in the ground. So that always feels good.
Squish. I remember the last time you did it, you had like a boot.
I just broken my leg. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I managed to plant about 3 trees I think last time.
Just crawling to the next position.
Yeah. Hopefully more able today.
Just bring your robot.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. Nice to see you. Thanks. Goodbye.
Bye.